Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, good morning. It's Sunday, November 2nd, 2008. That makes this Solder Smoke 94 live from Rome, sort of. sorry for the delay. I missed Solder Smoke last week. Those of you who are keeping track know that we usually do one every 2 weeks. Last week I was suffering from a head cold. You could probably still hear the effects. That's not a problem in the audio chain. It's more in the sinus area. I'm mostly recovered, so we'll be able to go on. And lots of good Solder Smoke information and news has piled up. I was also a bit delayed by preparations for Halloween. Halloween has, of course, come and gone here, but it's been a bit delayed for our kids because, we have an event where they can actually do some American-style trick-or-treating, and it's always a big event for them, but we had reports of really bad weather approaching on Halloween night, and so the organizers changed it around a little bit, and we're gonna delay it a little bit. But so trick or treating is still on the horizon. But we did carve a pumpkin here for a pumpkin contest at the kids' school, and they went to school dressed in costume. So even though we're pretty far from the USA and traditional Halloween celebrations, we did get quite a bit of it in, and we'll do a bit more in the week ahead. Weather is changed into the fall season here in Rome, and that means more rain, especially in the afternoon. So now I find myself walking home from work, half the time in the rain. Walking through Rome is pleasant. It's of course not quite so pleasant when you're getting rained on, but that's how I get my daily exercise and avoid struggling with the traffic. So off I go. I have put on my currently using a New York Yankees baseball hat, and which is appropriate, by the way, because those of you who are baseball fans, let me send you to the Baseball Encyclopedia. If you go to the Baseball Encyclopedia and look up my last name, you'll find Charlie or Charles Mara. That's my grandfather. He played for the Yankees. All right, enough baseball. Just let me tell you what's happening here at the workshop. I've been building amplifiers, and these are just it's mostly a design exercise. I am continuing to try to improve my design skills, as you've been hearing about for quite a while now, and I'm still working on the design of simple Class A feedback amps. So the ingredients for this exercise were a bit of copper, some silicon, some lead, some tin, some rosin, a dash of LT spice, leaven in quite a bit of SSDRA, some inspiration and guidance from EMRFD, a whole lot of Solder Smoke, and we've got it here. I've got it in my hand now. So far two stages, 2N2222s, Class A, with both degenerative and shunt feedback, and I've got it estimated at about 12 dB gain per stage, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been real educational. What I do is I move back and forth between the workbench and the computer with LT Spice running, and I start out, of course, just with a piece of paper and do the biasing, calculate how much emitter current I want, how much bias voltage on the base I need, then use some of the charts in EMRFD and the feedback amp program that comes with EMRFD to calculate the values of the degenerative feedback resistor and the shunt feedback resistor that goes from collector to base. And that's, of course, how you manage the input impedance and get it close to 50 ohms. At the output, I use I'm using toroidal transformers, not transmission line transformers. I have a primary and a secondary on mine, and I do the calculations to get the right what they call magnetizing impedance. On mine, I have 11 turns. The secondary is 11 turns on a ferrite FT50-61, and to get the 4-to-1 impedance transformation there from 50 ohms up to the desired 200 ohms, I have 22 turns on the primary. And then I do the same thing in the second stage, and it seems to work out quite well. I'm getting the desired amount of gain, and it's fun to go through there and measure the actual values of emitter current and gain and everything else, and see how they compare with those predicted by LT Spice and the feedback amp FBA program that comes with the experimental methods and RF design. I'm trying to mostly follow the kind of the philosophical advice that EMRFD puts out about the need to understand and to measure and to be quantitative about the to use the experimental method espoused in EMRFD, and I hope I'm making progress. These are simple little circuits, of course, but there's a lot to learn in there, at least for me. So that's what we've been working on. Put that back over on the bench. And Billy is here with me, and he's on the computer next to mine, and he's currently. Are you destroying aliens or what?
No.
What's up? What's up there?
I think it's
Well, yeah, he's destroying some sort of aliens there on the screen. we had a trip to the emergency room with him yesterday. Quite an adventure. We were out having breakfast, and all of a sudden he kind of doubled over. And for a while there, it looked like it might be some sort of kidney stone. For a while, it might be appendicitis, but turns out a far less complicated technical problem. I won't go into the details here at this hour of the morning. But he's fine, and we're all back safe and sound from our journey into the Italian hospital medical system. Everybody really treated us great, I must say. People were really very kind and took care of us right away. Really very, very grateful for that. So it was a good visit. As good a visit as it could be, but it worked out okay. All right. Listen, back to EMRFD And any mention of EMRFD, immediately we think of Wes, W7ZOI, and the other authors of that that great book. And there was a message from Wes that came across on the EMRFD Yahoo Groups group, an email message. And I really like this one. And it's about what happens when you take your oscilloscope and look at the waveform of your recently constructed oscillator. You know, you're hoping for that nice sine wave, clean sine wave coming out of there. And I have very rarely been rewarded with that sight. Usually, I put the scope on the new oscillator, and it looks at least kind of messed up, kind of not sine wave, you know. And Wes writes here. I remember the first time I looked at some oscillators after I got my hands on a high-speed oscilloscope. It was indeed a shock because, as you've observed, the waveforms are truly wild. This is more the nature of bipolar transistors than it is the nature of Colpitts versus Hartley versus whatever else you might throw in to the game. The same wild things happen with LC bipolar oscillators that happen with crystal-controlled units. And then Wes goes into a really interesting description of why these waveforms are wild, And it says here, generally there is no problem with the oscillator having some ratty waveforms in it. There may be some harmonic distortion in the output, depending upon the way that the output is extracted. As you point out, it is often a good thing to extract it from the tank, so long as you don't load the tank too much in the process. The transistor is usually operating in a rather deep class C mode. This is not a problem so far as performance, so long as the limiting is clean. That is, you want to have current limiting in the bipolar oscillator such that the transistor never goes into saturation. If it does go into saturation, the saturation resistance of the transistor will appear across the tank for part of the cycle, and this will lead to voltage limiting. The low saturation resistance will degrade tank Q. The other potential problem is if you should drive the emitter base junction so hard that it goes into breakdown in the reverse direction. The EB diode then zeners for a bit of each cycle, and that generates a lot of noise that will trash the phase noise performance of the oscillator. Some microwave transistors don't have a very high EB breakdown, so they can get noisy in oscillator applications, but this is usually not an issue. Bottom line is not to worry about the distortions. Know that they are there, and if they get in the way, fix them with filtering after the output is extracted. But they won't get in the way most of the time. We used to hear a lot about the beauty of pure sine waves, but we don't really need that purity. That's very encouraging, Wes. Thanks, because I rarely see that kind of purity here on on my workbench. So that was one of the many messages that you see on EMRFD and QRPL, and it just being a little light bulb goes off and it clarifies something that's been kind of bothering you for a while. And thanks to Wes and the EMRFD group guys for that one. Another little bit of inspiration that's, I think, a little bit far afield for us, but I spotted something. I mentioned this from time to time. A magazine that I get that I like a lot is Air and Space from the Smithsonian. I guess a knack of a different kind, although I guess when we use the term knack, we are referring to ham radio. I guess this is knack related. And there's an article in there called Toy Story, How Tossing Paper Airplanes Guided the Career of an Aerospace Engineer, article by Giles Lambertson. And it's about a fellow named Ken Blackburn. Okay. Good morning. We're doing solder smoke. Elisa just came in and said good morning. Usually we're doing solder smoke a little bit earlier. Ken Blackburn, it says here, while only in elementary school, Ken Blackburn settled on airplane design as a life study and began to shape his future in paper. He crafted reams of paper airplanes to learn the rudiments of aerodynamics, experimenting for years with variations on a fundamental airplane made from a square sheet of paper. He learned about concepts that most people don't encounter until they train to be pilots or study aerodynamics, dihedral angles, sink rates, and lift-to-drag ratios. Anyway, the article is a lot of fun, and it goes on to describe how Ken has managed to take his lifelong interest in paper airplanes and really turn it into a very interesting career designing and building UAVs, the unmanned aerial vehicles that are now so important, some of them quite small, but very sophisticated. And I just thought, when I read this thing, I said, wow, you know, if a guy can take his interest in paper airplanes and turn it into a career, well, there's hope for us. Maybe all that work with crystal radios and simple QRP transmitters will someday come in handy at a professional level. Anyway, I recommend that article to you. It's a lot of fun, and you get some free paper airplane designs in there. Billy and I are gonna build one of them. You hear it in a little bit. Another kind of interesting, and well, I guess we're on a kind of a book review kind of theme this morning. I wanted to mention a book I just read. It's a short book, but it's interesting to us for a couple of different reasons. It's of interest to NAC. I said to myself, why am I going to tell these guys about this book? And then I thought of two reasons, and I'll tell you about them in a minute. But the book is called My Detachment, and it's by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Tracy Kidder. It's about Kidder's year-long experience in the Vietnam War, and we usually don't bring war into our solder smoke discussions, and we'll focus on the kind of NAC-related stuff. Kidder's of interest to us, I think you'll all remember, he's the author of one of the really great technical books. I mean, I guess sort of almost like it's a technical book of a different kind. It's almost created kind of its own genre. But the book is The Soul of the New Machine. And it's about, it's Tracy Kidder's efforts to kind of track the construction of one of the early, I guess, smaller mainframe computers up in the Boston area. I really love that book, The Soul of the New Machine. And the title, I think, captures what we do a lot. We put soul in our machines. And there's a lot of ways we do that, of course. We do it when you do something wild, like putting a NE602 chip right next to a 6L6 tube. Or make use of some old crystals that came out of a Swan 240 from 1962. And again, put it right next to an NE555 timer chip or a microprocessor or a basic stamp or something like that. Or when you get your kids to help out with a piece of construction. Billy used to help me wind toroidal coils, and Maria has painted a few cabinets here for projects. Anyway, this is the soul of the new machine. Tracy Kidder wrote that book. And that definitely makes him of interest to NAC victims. Now, my detachment, the detachment that he worked in Vietnam, the detachment that the book's title refers to, is a detachment that was involved in electronic warfare activities, and it was referred to as radio research. Most of the book, I mean, it's short. It's about, I guess it's about 190 pages, and it's of course really well written. You could do it. You can go through it in a couple nights, but he described. It's, I must warn you, it's not mostly about the radio stuff. The radio stuff is almost like an aside, but it makes it interesting. And anyway, I thought I'd throw that out there. The I put it on the Gadgeteer bookshop page. If you go to the blog, soldersmoke.blogspot.com, if you go down on the right-hand side, you'll see the Gadgeteer Books. Just click on Gadgeteer Books, go to the miscellaneous section, and you'll see Tracy Kidder's book there if you're interested. That's our Solder Smoke Book of the Week. All right, let's see. Now, continuing with our review of NAC-related literature. This week, or maybe late last week, I had that happy experience of finding a new issue of Sprat, the Journal of the GQRP Club, in my mailbox. This is issue number 136, the autumn 2008 issue, and a fine issue it is indeed. Thanks very much to the guys from GQRP. I'll just take a quick wander through here. We have a signal injector and tracer by Peter G4UMB. Looks like a nice project using an LM386. Using the Hendrix Bidex 20A on 17 meters by Nigel Flatman, G0EBQ. The Bidex 20 on 17, it just sounds right. We have a new QRP club is born by Paul, G0WAT. This is the home county's QRP circle. And these are the world famous hedgehogs. I am hedgehog number 4, of course. So I take a special interest in this club. Glad to see them. They're in Sprat. Next, we have a low voltage 3-tube shortwave regenerative receiver by Ernst Olivier, F5LVG. Very fine business. Looking using these little tubes, but I think he's using them at very low voltage, which is great fun for those of us who have gotten used to working on low voltage, and looks like a lot of fun there. A line sampler by Mitch Lee, a KB6FPW. Looks like a very interesting circuit. They got an ad there, a new book, Radio Projects for the Amateur, Volume 3 by Drew Diamond, VK3XU. and they're selling it. Member price of £5. So I'm going to get a hold of one of those. Taking QRP on holiday, a DIY QRP D-Expedition by Les Austin, G0 NMD. And he went to Malta. And it's a real interesting article on the Malta operation. And he met up with some Maltese hams down there. And it looks like he had a great time. He was on Gozo, the Northern Island. All right. Then we have Trip 15, DSB detector for the shortwave defined radio. All right. By Eduardo Alonso, EA3, GHS. Looks like a nice circuit. More on software-defined radio in a minute. Let's see. Club sales. A side tone monitor by David Smith. G4 COE. A report on beacons. And the worldwide NCDX IARU beacon transmission system. Very interesting. A VLF reception of SAQ on 17.2 kilohertz. This is the real loafer stuff. Low frequency. By Roger, G3XBM. A simple telephony transmitter tester. All right. By Steve Hartley, G0FUW, another member of the Solder Smoke gang. FDC FD460A review, a review of a handheld from he purchased from Hong Kong, a small handheld rig, very pleased with. All right, a review of that rig, a stand for the FT817, easy meter shunts by Jim Brett, G0TFP, getting started with PSK31 by John, N6HI. I don't know, John, I've tried. I don't know, it might not just be my thing, I don't know, one of these days. Amplifier filter unit with power supply by Aaron from the Netherlands. QRP from a difficult location, a personal story by Dave Lindsay. Got problems soldering? Here are some tips to make the job easier by Mike, G3JKX. Working with SMD components by our good friend Tony Fishpool, G4WIF. All right. Antennas, anecdotes, and awards. And communications and contests, a transistorized PA-AM modulator. By Gordon Pope, G3ASV, a real simple AM modulator here. This circuit I thought was really kind of interesting. So check that one out. Member news by Chris Page, G4BUE. And I'm always happy to see my call sign in Chris Page's pages. We have here I0N2CQR, M0HBR has been bitten by the QRSS bug and now has a 20 milliwatt signal on or about 10140 hertz using 3-second dits from Rome. All right. And Bill says, Solder Smoke podcast continues. Indeed, it does. With a new episode every 2 weeks. Well, sometimes 3 weeks. There is now also a Solder Smoke blog, updated frequently at soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Hey, Chris, thanks for doing that column. And I always look forward to seeing it. It's always a really important part of Sprat. And I'm always happy to see my call sign in there. I often take it and show it to Billy. I said, look. We're in Sprat again. Thanks. And on the back, GQRP Club sales. So, gentlemen, if you're not subscribed to Sprat, you really should be. Get in touch with the fellows at GQRP, and it'll keep you in touch with those exciting articles like the ones I just outlined. All right, I guess we're in the British portion of the show, and this we have a real treat for you this episode, Chris. M0JRQ attended the GQRP Club's recent mini convention, and he has sent in a report that I think will set the standard for all future field reports from Solder Smoke correspondents. This thing, the quality of the report is really, really high. It just has the kind of pleasant feel to it of All Things Considered on National Public Radio. He does a really good job on it. He gets the background noise of the event. He gives a little bit of a description of the trip to the event. He talks to the key participants. You get a real flavor of a real sense of what it was like to be at this event. I really enjoyed listening to it, and I'm sure you guys will too. Thanks very much, Chris, and I'll just, without further ado, put it on right now.
Hello. Well, it's just after 8 o'clock on the morning of Saturday, the 18th of October, 2008. I'm just leaving Pontefract in West Yorkshire for Rishworth and the GQRP Mini Convention 2008.
Well, it's about 20 to 9 now. It's been a glorious morning driving through the Pennines, up past Boothwood Reservoir. On my right, there's the sun pouring down like honey across the reservoir, and its surface is ruffled by an early breeze this morning. It really is lovely. And finally, heading up the Rippendon Road north from the M62 motorway and entering the Rishworth School. Let's go in and have a look around. Well, the main hall is beginning to fill up already. George, G3RJV, and Graham, G3MFJ, are much in evidence, greeting and meeting.
Cheers yesterday afternoon.
Well, it's just after 9 o'clock. The preparations, according to G3MFJ, have been arduous. And here's George Dobbs to introduce us to the 2008 Mini Convention.
Well, good morning. I'm watching a motley group of radio hams bring in all kinds of juicy junk. In fact, I've sold a bit of juicy junk myself, and we're still to open. It's now before we open, but it looks as if we're going to have a good occasion, because I can see the tables laid out, and there's nothing splendid or new. Everything is jaded, old, and interesting. So just the kind of occasion that the GQRP Club ought to be involved in.
Thank you, George.
Well, things are beginning to liven up a little now on the morning of the convention. So let's just go over to the QRP ARCI stand and have a word with Ken.
Okay. Hey, good morning. This is Ken Evans, W4DU. We're at the new location. Is it Rishworth School for Girls, I believe, of the GQRP convention. Doors are about to open in 20 minutes, and there's already almost a full complement of vendors in the room. There's still people moving in. If you get an opportunity to come over here, especially if you like Eddie Stones, you'll see a few of those. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
10 o'clock finally rolled around, and George made his opening address in what's now a crowded, I think it's fair to say, packed hall.
Two things to say, really. First of all, a big thank you to all of those who helped to set everything up, especially Anthony and actually Graham in the corner spent a great deal of time working on this, and the local Halifax Club as well. The programme of lectures begins at 11 o'clock, and that's going to be in the lecture theatre, which is actually just outside there. You can see it if you look through the window. So you have to leave.
And an hour later, the lectures began with software-defined radio for home construction. This was billed as Yan G0BBL and Alan M0PUB. Sadly, Alan M0PUB had a sore throat, so Yan BBL took on the whole show himself.
Good morning, everybody. Yan Fadan, G0BBL, my co-speaker, Alan M0PUB on the front row. Originally, we were going to do the presentation together. Unfortunately, Alan is suffering from a bad throat. It's one of his bugs going around, and no doubt, you know, he's one of the people that's been affected this moment in time. Actually, I was suffering from the bug last week, so unfortunately, I'm okay to do the talk.
What followed was a fascinating hour of demonstrations and some theory, I must say, but I think everyone enjoyed it, as you can tell from the applause. As George told us earlier, there was plenty to see on the traders' stands. Sadly, the Fist CW Club crew didn't show up. I don't know why, but perhaps we'll get to see them next week at Donington. Several of the homebrew suppliers were there, Jab Dog, Bellwood and others. And in between them, there were tables covered in the kind of gear I expect to see at a rally. An FT817 that doesn't transmit, a KW2000B with all the extras, and even a linear amplifier for those about to relinquish QRP values. Hidden away in corners and on ledges were dozens of Morse keys of all kinds, and of course, under those tables were the cardboard boxes. Say no more.
Yeah, it's very expensive, this. Yeah. 150 a roll.
So, while the bargain hunters hunted bargains and the connoisseurs haggled over junk, the lectures continued with Don Baines, M1KTA, talking about Alpine-style de-expeditions. The traditional pie and peas lunch, now, I don't think that can be described, only eaten. Delicious. That was followed by Antennas for Limited Spaces, a really informative, lively and inspiring hour from Colin at G3VTT, the QRP Club's current AAA editor, and the president of the First Class CW Club. Replacing Practical Wireless's Rob Mannion, who was unable to attend, George Dobbs stepped in with a revised presentation of his Dayton lecture, Life's Too Short for QRO, and that was thoroughly enjoyable. Last off, as the hall was being cleared up in one of the school laboratories, there was an open technical forum where David Stockton, GM4ZNX, applied, as they say in the handout, his flexible technical mind to subjects suggested by your questions. And I think everyone that attended really enjoyed that. And the day broke up around about 5 o'clock as the last few cars were laden down with treasures. Chris Pearson, M0JRQ for Solder Smoke, Rishworth, Yorkshire, UK.
All right, very good. You know, you listen to that, and it's another reminder of the universality of the knack. You hear George's descriptions of the really, I forget the word he used, but the horrendous junk that's being brought in, and the enthusiasm with which it's greeted. That's us. This is knack. This is knack stuff. Only we understand these things. I really enjoyed the report. And thanks again, Chris. All right, still in Great Britain, I got a report on the Blogspot page. I got an email and I put it up on the Blogspot page. G3ZOD is very active in QRSS Maria Patricia has arrived. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning.
There she is. G3ZOD is involved in QRSS with a manned experimental propagation transmitter of his own, puts out a very nice, very distinctive signal, and apparently he's been listening using the site in the Netherlands that allows you to get a waterfall display of, I think, 80, 40, and 20 meters to see what's on the band. They're using software-defined radio there, and they've got it linked up to a website. I have the link to this site on the blog page, so check it out if you're interested. But what it allows you to do is take a look and a listen to 80, 40, and 20 meters as it is received at this site in the Netherlands. It's a very interesting setup they have. G3ZOD was looking at it the other day and got a very interesting display on the waterfall. Aliens on 80 meters. You got to check this out. I mean, it looks like it's not an artifact. It's not, you know, the noise. It's not like a strange cornflake coming out of a box of cornflakes or anything like that. It's for real. Somebody put up a signal there with the face, and I think later on he sent me an email with a picture of the full body view of an alien visitor, you know, shades of Roswell, New Mexico, on 80 meters. I put a note up on the Blogspot page that the real issue is going to be now whether they're eligible for DXCC credit, and how do you get a QSL card? Anyway, Check it out. I thought it was interesting. I've got a picture. I've got the picture that that OMZOD sent us up on the webpage. Speaking of QRSS and MEPTs, I also have up on the blog page kind of instructions on how you can use the online grabbers to see if my little QRSS signal is making it across Europe. There are grabbers up in Denmark and in Belgium that just about any hour of the day, if the sun is shining over Italy, if the sun is up over Italy, my signal, which is now at 50 milliwatts, is usually bouncing off the ionosphere and making it into Belgium and Denmark. And if you click onto one of the online grabbers during European daylight hours, you can see how it's going almost live. I think it's kind of fun. If you look carefully below my signal, you might also see Paolo's 2.5 milliwatt solar powered beacon active a bit below my frequency. That's kind of fun because it's completely solar powered. It's operating at about 1.5 volts from tiny solar panels, and it puts out about 2.5 milliwatts. So I thought that was that's always an interesting thing to take a look at. We have all kinds of other stuff on the Blogspot page. Speaking of solar power, we have links to a site that Woody sent us about homebrew solar power. And I put a note there saying, those of you guys who are running like me, store-bought solar panels. Well, I don't know. You should start feeling bad. You should start feeling like an appliance operator, because there are guys out there who are rolling their own in the solar panel area. So check it out, and maybe you too can produce homebrew solar panels to make truly homebrew electricity. I mentioned software-defined radios. I want to thank Bruce, WB8OGK, and Tony, KB9YIG, and the entire Soft Rock 40 group. They sent me a software-defined radio, the RXTX version 6.3. I haven't put it together yet, but I feel like I'm already more digital than I was before just by having it here in the shack. I'm going to put this thing together, and I'm going to make an effort to break into the exciting world of digital electronics. As you guys know, I've been an analog guy, and I admit, resisted the transition into the technology of the late 20th and 21st century. But the arrival of the SoftRock 40 group kit might be just what I needed to make me move forward in this area. So maybe going digital. Thanks a lot, guys. Hey, I want to ask for a favor. I can't do it because I'm using this clunky old computer. I'm still using... You can't believe how clunky the computer that I use to produce Solder Smoke really is, but it's got CD drive issues. I need somebody to put all the episodes of Solder Smoke, well, I guess, especially 1 through 46, but put all of them on there. Maybe do one with 1 through 46, and then the others 46 on some CDs. Mike's wife Jackie up in Alaska has asked that we do this. I think she'd like to be able to listen to the shows. I think we're coming back and forth to work, and she needs them placed on CDs. I do it myself, like I said, but my CD drive is currently kaput. The smoke has been released, so I don't want it. In order to avoid dozens of people doing the same thing, if you're willing to help out with this, just shoot me an email, and I'll send you the address. And then if you could put the discs in the mail, I think that'd be a real help for Mike's wife. It'd be a real nice thing to do. Thanks for your help on that. All right, that brings us time. It's now time for what do we do at this point, Billy? We bang the gong. The real gong returned. It showed up, recovered from the storage locker. And so I've been hearing actual real gongs, but we'll spare your ears. Don't worry. We'll spare you, and we'll go with the... It's time for...
Sorry, smoke bell bag.
I love it.
Indeed.
Yeah, there it is, the electronic version of the gong. All right. Hey, there's a couple of bits of mail that I got that I forgot to mention. But our good friend Alan Yates in Australia has sent in a nice message a while back about all of his many projects, and always great to hear from Alan. We first came in contact with Alan many years ago when we spotted his Trivial Electric Motor. Remember that one, Billy?
Oh yeah, that's
one. Yeah, the Trivial Electric Motor. That we built, and then we corresponded with Alan, and man, he's got a great website. He's in cahoots with Mike, Alpha Alpha One Tango Juliet in Vermont. There's kind of an axis of technological excellence there between Vermont and Australia, and they are very much two like-minded individuals working on projects, and a lot of really great ideas are coming out of that collaboration. So, Alan, thanks for that message, and I was looking at your website the other day and was really, really impressed. And I want to thank Les. Les has been helping me with iTunes and the RSS feed for Solder Smoke. Les has finally cracked the code and allowed us to get the Solder Smoke logo now appears. If you go to for those of you who are getting Solder Smoke via iTunes, you can go and take a look now. If you call up Solder Smoke on the iTunes system, instead of that kind of sad generic logo that they put for podcasts that don't have logos of their own, they have our logo up there, and it looks really good. I think, who knows, it might help attract attention to the podcast. Another thing that you guys could do, if you're of a mind, go to the iTunes page there and put a review down for Solder Smoke. Just send them a few lines saying you like the podcast, and I don't know, we may get some more attention for the show in the iTunes system. That'd be great. Paul, WA1MAC, sends in a message and says that he picked up two Drake 2Bs at a recent ham fest. So two 2Bs. Is that 4B squared? I don't know. Little Drake 2B math humor there, but good luck with the 2Bs, Paul. He sent a picture. They looked really good. Scott, KD5NJR, he sends in a note that he was another Kennedy Space Center visitor, went there on his honeymoon. I think I might have mentioned this in the last show. But I got an idea. Who knows? This could be a business opportunity there. You know, come up with special kind of honeymoon packages of interest to NAC victims, you know, and including the Kennedy Space Center in the honeymoon a travel package. That's the kind of thing. Well, no, it might not be a good idea there. It might be the honeymoon might be. Well, yeah, okay. Enough of that idea. I don't think that would be really good. But I was glad to hear that I was not the only one to do the Kennedy Space Center on the honeymoon there. All right, Bruce, VE9QRP, great call sign. Wrote in about a new free circuit simulator called QUCS, QUCS. And it's, I forget what the acronym means, but I guess if you just Google it with QUCS and simulator, it's free. Apparently it's got a lot of nice features there. I really haven't checked it out, and the reason I haven't is because I have just completed climbing the somewhat steep learning curve on LT Spice. And having figured out how the whole thing works in LT Spice, I just don't want to confuse myself by starting on another simulator. But those of you who are interested in the different kinds of simulators might want to check that out. And thanks again to Bruce for sending in news about that. Keith, G0CZR, has sent in a nice message on bubble wrap insulation and the possibility of using bubble wrap to temperature to thermally insulate the oscillators in MEPT transmitters. I might try it. My temperature stability is pretty much been pretty good on mine. What I do is I have my transmitter now just with the circuitry kind of open to the air. So any heat that's being generated inside the rig, and there is some heat because the amplifiers are running Class A, gets dissipated right away. So it's only real changes in the room temperature, and there's not a lot of variation there. So I think I'm okay. But one of these days, if I go in there and mess with it again, I might put some of the bubble wrap insulation around it. Somebody sent me an idea, and I didn't jot down the call sign here, but it's the idea of a grab bag contest where you kind of everybody gets a grab bag full of electronic parts, and then in a contest has to kind of put something together for it. I'm gonna dig up and get more details about this idea because it does sound interesting, and I'll give you guys some more details on that in the next episode. Bob KD4EBM. Gave me more information on lasers and some more helpful advice on which ones are safe and which ones are not. He gives kind of a thumbs down on the green lasers as toys for kids and points out that the cheap ones are emitting not only the laser energy, but they're using infrared in there to kind of, I guess, kind of get the lasers going. And a lot of the infrared comes out the front of the laser also. And this could be, of course, damaging to the eyes in addition to the damage that might be caused by the laser beam itself. So, all right, we'll stick to the red toy lasers for Billy's current round of experimenters. He's frowning now. When he gets a little bit older, we'll let him take on the... that's right. Billy turns 11 this week. But I guess we'll give him a little bit more time before we get him into the really dangerous balloon popping, match lighting, green lasers. But one of these days, John VK3AJG sent me a nice links to a very fine business homebrew sideband rig for 80 meters that he designed and built. I'll try to get the link to that up on the Blogspot page. Todd KE7KXI writes in about a store called Apex Electronics in Sun Valley, California. Definitely a place for NAC victims. I visited the website. It looks really, really interesting. And he points out that it's got that old electronic smell. We've been talking quite a bit about smells here. We talked about the different aromas of solder smoke. We had somebody... Steve Snort Rosin is apparently a real connoisseur of solder smoke aroma, much the way some people become experts in, I guess, cigar smoke or fine wines and things like that. I guess now we can open up a whole new area of investigation here by the about the smells of old electronics. Apex Electronics has it, and Todd, thanks for letting us know about that. Jerry, our friend in the Dakotas, Jerry, NR5A, is much better. He's out of the hospital feeling better, and he's put up a blog. He's working with his Drake 2A and his homebrew rigs, and I guess he's a real good example of how the knack and enthusiasm for radio and electronics can really help you get past health problems. And in Jerry's message, it was obvious that he's really bounced back, and the enthusiasm for melting solder and building things and getting on the air is back. So glad you're back and active, Jerry, and look forward to hearing from you. Continued good luck there, and I hope you recover quickly. Todd KE7KXI writes in and says that this is another example of how solder smoke has caused a knack relapse. Somebody had been away from it for a long time by listening to the show. This is Todd was the guy who told us about Apex. He's got the knack relapse. So thanks very much, and good luck with the good luck with the knack relapse there, Todd. There is no cure. It's just, that melting solder and solder smoke can help you with the symptoms. Bob, N7ZF, he suggests that we set up a solder smoke group on Facebook. I've been hearing all about Facebook. I don't have a Facebook page myself. I guess this has something to do with being born in the International Geophysical Year. we're willing to explore new technologies here. Let's face it, we've got a podcast, we've got a blog. I guess there's no reason why there shouldn't be a solder smoke Facebook network. And Bob points out that it would help us communicate better and keep the group together better. So why not? If anybody's of a mind to do it, go ahead and set it up, and we'll be blogging, podcasting, and Facebooking too. Bob also points out that he's got a great affection for the Hewlett-Packard 200 audio oscillators. Apparently, a very historically important piece of test gear, and this is kind of fun. Bob wonders if it's true that these HP 200 audio oscillators are actually used to homogenize Campbell's soup. That'd be a new use for electronic test gear. If anybody knows whether Campbell's soup is homogenized using HP 200 audio oscillators, or if this is just an urban legend, please let us know. These are the kinds of things that that NAC victims and solder smoke listeners are concerned about. Guys, that's about it for this week. I hope you all are doing well, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Solder Smoke. And special thanks again to Chris M0JRQ for that really great piece from the GQRP Club mini convention. That's it. That's it for this week. And again, 7-3 from Rome.